So continuing with chapter 12, further aspects of transcendental service, devotional service. Serving the deity with great devotion. It is said in the Adi Purana, a person who is constantly engaged in chanting the holy name and who feels transcendental pleasure being engaged in devotional service is certainly awarded the facilities of devotional service and is never given just mukti, liberation. Mukti means liberation from material contamination. When liberated, one does not have to take birth again in the material world. The impersonalists desire to merge into the spiritual existence, to end their individual existence. But according to Srimad Bhagavatam, mukti is only the beginning of one's becoming situated in normal condition. The normal condition of every living entity is to be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. From the statement of the Adi Purana, it appears that a devotee is simply satisfied with being engaged in devotional service. He does not aspire for any liberation from material conditional life. In other words, anyone who is engaged in devotional service is not in the material condition of life, although he may appear so. So serving the deity with great devotion. So he's pointing out the point that the devotee then is always absorbed in chanting and is therefore automatically liberated, but he goes beyond liberation. This very important point is that for the devotee, see, the impersonalists, their liberation is when they leave the body, then they merge into the Brahman. They're able to come up to some kind of platform like that. For the devotee, even within the body, they're on the platform of liberation. His liberation means that here Prabhupada says one won't take birth again, and it also means that one is on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So this Brahma-Bhuta platform is the platform of liberation. So for the saintly person or the devotee, then this platform is very easy to obtain. By the process of chanting and that, then they come to this platform. Then they go beyond this. See, liberation just means the point of neutrality. We are not in the material world, but we're not in the spiritual world either. So the devotee, because they're always serving the Lord, then it says that they will be given, they'll be awarded the facilities of devotional service. So the facilities of devotional service means that one has to be in a place where one can serve, then with devotees who are serving, with the Lord who one is serving. So then one gets that. It says not just mere mukti. Because mukti means you just come to that neutral platform. So that's nothing, for a devotee that's nothing very wonderful. It means that's where we start from, and that's where we fall from. So it's not a big position. For someone in the material world it looks very big. But for the devotee it's not a very important aspect. Therefore devotees are always aspiring for pure devotional service, and the facilities of mukti they're not looking for. They're not thinking that I won't take birth here again, all miseries will be finished. Sometimes you hear a devotee may be interested that that world, free from this material, I want to get free. Is interested in the platform of liberation. You know, so there is some contamination of the material mode of goodness there. There's some attachment to it. So for the devotee, he's not attached to this mode of goodness, this material mode of goodness. He knows that this is the best platform to get into pure devotional service. Because when one is in goodness, then passion and ignorance is very minimal. So the lifestyle in goodness means that there's very minimal opportunity for or interest in sense gratification. And there's very minimal disturbance in the material world because one is very minimally dealing with it. And how one's dealing, one is dealing with in the way that Krishna says to deal. So it gives that, but one is not attached to that. This is very important. To act in goodness or to elevate oneself to the platform of goodness, one doesn't have to be attached to it. Right? Generally, we think the normal position is we only do things that we're attached to. If we're not attached to them, we don't do them. Right? But the Krishna in the Gita is mentioning on the material side, we do things because it is duty. It is our duty to do. And so by following our duty, then it works very, then we become freed from the material contamination. But we're not attached to the duty. We're not attached to not doing the duty. We're not attached to the fruits of the duty. And we don't think that we are the one that is causing the fruits. Right? We just, in other words, Krishna comes to the material world to perform pastimes. He comes here and just does what he's supposed to do here. So in the same way as the devotee, their idea is that they will come to the platform of being able to serve the Lord, means they have to be on the same kind of platform. Just like when one does deity worship, then before the offering of items, there's a process called yoga or purvanga karma, means preliminary activities. The whole idea is to bring one's consciousness up and, you know, one the pure being up to the, you know, physical platform, up to the transcendental platform. Then by bringing to that platform, then it is very natural to be able to serve the Lord who is on that transcendental platform. So this is the process, is in the material world. So purvanga karma we may do in the morning for, you know, 5-10 minutes before starting the main puja, and that with setting everything up and worshipping the guru and purifying all the paraphernalia and getting everything ready and getting in the proper consciousness. And then that prepares us for that puja that we're going to do then for, you know, whatever it is, some time, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour. So the idea is we're trying to prepare ourselves for eternally doing this kind of service. So then the preliminary activities then take some time. So the whole idea is that we want to bring our consciousness to that transcendental platform. So the transcendental platform is that platform of Brahma-Bhuta, the liberated platform. So for us, it's just a step we're going through. We want to become transcendental so that one can actually develop prema for the Lord. If there is attachment to the material world, we cannot come to the platform of prema. Prema is the other side of liberation. It's the other side of mukti. This side of liberation, there's material conditioning. And the other side, there is prema. So we come to that middle stage simply to take us through. It's like you're going somewhere and you have to go to the bus stand to get on the bus. We're not attached to the bus stand. We don't go to the bus stand because we like the bus stand so much. We go to the bus stand because we know that's where we'll get the bus. So the same way is for the devotee, liberation is just something that one passes through because that's on the way to pure love for Krishna. So it's not something of interest or value. It just comes automatically. Just like when you take prasadam, automatically hunger and thirst, all these things are taken care of. That is secondary. You know, the main thing is honoring prasadam, remembering Krishna like this. So, yeah. So the liberation just gets, the devotee never. So this platform of goodness, then, that is endeavored for because that is the duty. So as Krishna, as you're mentioning, as Krishna comes here and performs his pastimes, means he just does the activity. Therefore, we just do the activities that Krishna asks us to do. We perform our duties, but we're not attached to these duties. It's just, this is the duty. We have a particular conditioned nature. We are at a particular stage in that conditioned nature, in our consciousness, in our development, and we perform those activities of that. And that's all. It's just like, it's like a lila. It's just done. And then one does all the things that go along with it. Just like an actor in a drama dresses according to the part, speaks the word of the part, takes the mood, the facial expressions, everything of the part. Then it's very pleasing, right? Everybody knows the drama is not real in the sense that the people who are there are not those personalities. But if they do it very nicely, everybody appreciates the drama. And the purpose of the drama, you know, of bringing out the Lord's pastimes, remembrance of the Lord, then that is, everybody's very happy. Everybody knows that, you know, this is an actor dressed up, costume, makeup, and all these things. But it actually does the thing. So in the same way, then the devotees know, other devotees, they're just dressed up in these different ways. They take the different aspects of varna and ashram, they perform their different material duties, and they do them very nicely. But it's understood that this is being done like this just because it pleases Krishna. Krishna says, do your duty for him. So they do their duty for him. So it becomes a very, very nice thing. So there's not attachment. Difficulty comes as if we'll only do something if we're attached to it. Then that creates a big problem, big disturbance, very big disturbance. So there has to be a balance like that. Because, you know, the result is not the important thing anyway. It means remembrance of Krishna, pleasing of Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. That's what's important. And remembrance. That's very common. Kunti Devi, they had all their opulence, had all the facilities in that, you know, which is the natural result of them performing their activities. But she wasn't satisfied with that. She was saying, we better, you know, we go back into the forest where Krishna's there, we're always remembering Krishna. This would be much better for us. You know, now that we've gotten the fruits of our endeavors, we've performed our duties very properly as Kshatriyas and righteous Kshatriyas. We've done nothing wrong. And now we've gotten the fruits, we're the emperors of the world. But we're not satisfied with that. That's not the real satisfying thing. As we see, a very short time later, then Parikit was born. And once he was, you know, established that he would be of proper culture and everything and ready to take the throne and all that, they left. Right? Did he actually sit on the throne? And then they left? I don't remember. Or it was just that he appeared and then they were happy and they left. I don't remember. In any case, you're talking about 16 years. You know, so whether they left, you know, very soon after that or after 16 years, that's not, I mean, they went to, you know, over 100 years or more of trouble. And then Maxna is sitting there 16 years. And then they left, went to the forest. Like that. So that was not the important thing. So the devotee does the duty. What facility comes? Nice facility comes, they use it in Krishna's service. Very minimal facility comes, that's used in Krishna's service. It doesn't matter for the devotee. The important thing is that there's a conditioned nature, and that conditioned nature is recognized and must be engaged in the Lord's service. That is what's there. So if one has to, like them, they're Kshatriyas, they're Grihasthas, so then they perform those duties. And then when those duties are up, as soon as the next person in line is ready, immediately vanaprastha, they went to the forest. So they were not attached to all this, you know. Not that, well, they worked for so long, so at least we should stay a little while to enjoy it. No. You know, as soon as they were put on the established on the throne and they understood now Krishna is going to go back to Dwarka, right there the whole, you know, their attachment to those facilities was immediately seen, that they were not interested. So that is the point, is that goodness, the duties, the activities in goodness, that is the natural activity or situation for the devotee. But attachment to the mode of goodness, attachment to liberation, that is not of any interest to the devotee. It's just something that's done. Right? It's better. Just like, yeah. So then Prabhupada makes a concluding statement, is that the devotee is satisfied just doing devotional service. And by doing that, then they are not in the material condition of life anyway. Even though they appear, though, that way. Like the Pandavas, it appears that they're performing all material activities, they have their wife, their kingdom, they're fighting, they're, you know, they've been insulted by Duryodhana, and they're reacting to that. But these are just their duties. Right? The king must do it. He's challenged, he must do it. Not that Yudhishthira likes gambling. He's been challenged to gambling, then he he has to respond. You know, he has to take up that challenge. So it's not that there's an over interest or over attachment to these things. Any questions on that? Yes.
On your concluding statement, you say that Yudhishthira had no attachment to gambling and was challenged and he had to respond.
Yes.
The implication is that performance of duty takes precedence over anything. Is that correct?
The basic thing is duties, meaning, see here, it becomes a very interesting point. Is that, could you hear what he said? Like that. Is that, so you have devotional service. So devotional service takes precedent over everything. So in devotional service, you have three platforms. You have the Bhagavat platform, which is chanting and preaching of the holy name. So that's the, basically, that platform can be fully appreciated above, once one comes to the liberated platform. But it is there throughout. Because it is on that platform, it is independent and it works at all stages of one's advancement. Then, the next platform supporting that, or how you say, assisting, is the process here of serving the deity with great devotion, is the Pancharatrik process. So that comes in what we would call our sadhana. You know, getting up in the morning, bathing, how we dress, putting tilak, chanting of our Gayatris. Then, you know, honoring of prasad, the system we honor prasad, how we chant in the, you know, our beads, how we perform our, you know, Bhagavatam recitation, how we worship Tulsi, all these different activities that have some kind of the, how you say, ritualistic aspect that's connected with sadhana, like that. Then, supporting that, we have the activities of Varnashram, the activities of the ashrams and the varnas, which may be there in our day-to-day duties. Sometimes the worship of the deity or the preaching of the Bhagavat, that is specifically or directly our occupational duty. And then sometimes we see these other aspects are there also. Like one may be preaching, but one has a family, or one may be doing deity worship and then sometimes some preaching. Or, you know, so many different mixes may be there. So for the Vaishnavas, you know, especially in our understanding, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, then we, all this is called devotional service. So whether it is the duties of Varnashram, the duties of deity worship, or the duties of chanting Hare Krishna, they're all seen as devotional service. So those duties are the most important. Now of those, then the chanting, preaching, that's more important than the Pancharatrik aspect, which is more important than the Varnashram aspect. So the principle is the same throughout all three of them, but the detail manifests in a different way. So depending upon the situation, a detail of the lower, like let's say a Varnashram, may be adjusted by the detail of the Pancharatra or the detail of the Bhagavat. But the principle is never changed. That will never be changed. That's always the same. So in this way, then if, just like we see, we may have the ritualistic aspect of how we perform our initiation. But the ritual itself is not the real connection. That just is something now we say, okay, now they're initiated. You know, it's like everybody can say, yes, they're initiated. And the person who's get initiated, their mind can say, yes, something happened. But we see many times for certain situations or for preaching, the ritual is not performed. Right? It's not performed. Just the spiritual master gives beads name like this. There's no fire. There's no big ceremony. Everybody's not there clapping and banging kartals and drums when the name is said. And that may just be in their room. So for some higher aspect, then the lower one is given up. But the principle of being accepting the spiritual master, being accepted by the spiritual master, identifying oneself as a servant of Krishna and getting a spiritual name to that effect, then gaining the spiritual mantras for the worship of the deity, wearing the tilak, the neck beads, all that, that is, can never, because that is the principle that's there. The principle of surrender to Guru and acknowledging it, that is there. Mm-hmm. so there. But then sometimes we see, we may go out and we're in some dangerous places to preach, so we may not wear the tilak or the neck beads to be seen. So those are the details of the pancharatrik system. But for the preaching, we may not wear them. We may not wear the dress of the Vaishnava, like that, which is also part of the pancharatrik system. But the principle of understanding the material world is a place of misery, which is signified by the neck beads, understanding that the path going back to Godhead is the actual path to take. If you give up the material world, you have to accept something else. So you accept the path going back to Godhead. And that's the tilak, you know. And then identifying ourselves as a devotee, then you have all the different markings and all those. But we identify ourselves anyway in our consciousness. But the external is not there. So then even the pancharatrik may be cut for the Bhagavat. But the principles are never lost. So it's important that the devotees understand and study these things. Then, no matter what the sphere, they know how to act. Then there wouldn't be bewilderment. Sometimes the situation changes external, and then a devotee doesn't know how to act, or it's so totally different. And then their devotional service suffers, because they don't understand what is the relationship. Just like example of Gadadhar Pandit, that Pundarik Vidyanidhi at one point then went to Bangladesh and was gone for some time. So then Gadadhar Pandit was feeling that this connection with the Guru has been lost. And he was discussing with devotees about what to do and all this, and should he accept someone else or hear the mantras from someone else because of that distance. So then it was explained that the Vapu, it may be appreciated sometimes, but the Vani is the essential point, the instruction of the spiritual master. So even that distance is there, because you're dealing on the transcendental platform, there is no distance. Right? Distance is a material thing. Material concept, time and distance, like that. So that's not there in this. One is following, so it doesn't matter. Then, if one understands these principles, then one doesn't become bewildered by this or a change in situations or that. One knows the principles, and then one applies it in detail the best one can. But one obtains the principle. That's the important thing. So when someone wants to change something externally, that may be important for time, place, and circumstance. But one can't change the principle. One changes the principle, then one is actually then playing with the process. And the process can only be given by God. And is handed down to the acharyas. So the principles are never played with. And then the details, the acharyas give us different, directions for a certain time, place, and circumstance. What's the best way to deal with the details? Like that. And at the same time, as by their own example and instructions, they show how to adjust that for different situations. Like that. So devotional service means all that. So when we say prescribed duty, we mean whatever the level may be according to what is the particular aspect of the service. So some aspect of our service may be Varnashram, some aspect may be Pancharatra, some aspect may be Bhagavat. Because they're all very nicely blended into the process of devotional service as we know it. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So when it says, Krishna says, perform your prescribed duties, it means all of these levels, whatever it may be. Like he's saying in the either by understanding, by remembering, by the actual service itself, or like that, by rendering direct service to the deity. Like that. So it's always being devotional service goes on. You can't separate them if one understands the process. Therefore, our definition of Varnashram only means Daiva Varnashram. And for us, Varnashram is devotional service if it's performed according to the direction of the acharyas. Right? Those things that they say are unfavorable in Varnashram for devotional service, those are given up. Those that they accept are favorable or neutral, those are performed. And even in Pancharatra, so much of the aspects Some aspects are considered unfavorable. Those we drop. What is favorable, we perform. Like that. And then even in the Bhagavad, then we see some favorable directions are given, like chanting on beads. That's very much stressed that we should chant on beads. Like that. And count the number of rounds so that there's a set number. We don't do less than that. We can do more, but never less. Like that. We should chant, you know, loudly. We can hear, concentrate on the name. So like this, there's many duties, or, you know, prescribed duties for the chanting process. Does that make some sense? Anything else? Yeah. Loudly.
For preaching, we can remark it, the Tulsi deeds.
For preaching?
Sorry, in any case, for preaching, if I know I'm in the meanwhile, I die, so I want to have it.
Yes. Question was, is we can if we remove our neck beads for preaching and in the process of preaching we die, what will happen to us? Because we have no neck beads. Mataji says you'll go directly back to Godhead. Because if you're preaching, then the Lord is there. See, the neck beads signify that one understands the material world is a place of misery. And we are giving up endeavor in the material world. That's actually what the neck beads means. They're not just some nice decoration. You know, they're not just, how you say, fashion. Right? I mean, you go to the... It was funny. I was in Poland, right? We were going to the Polish Woodstock. And when the Namhata devotees come, you know, yeah, hundreds of them, they all come for the festival. They all come dressed many of the times in, you know, their civilian dress, you know. So then sometimes as you're walking through, it was a big campus where the where our tents were. It was, you know, so many tents, big tent and then a tent for, you know, so many tents for preaching and prasad distribution and boutiques and all different things were going on. It was a very large area they gave us within the Woodstock compound. So I was looking around for, you know, and people come through and then you see if they're devotees or not, you know, and everybody who came through was wearing some kind of like neck beads or something around the neck. So then after, you know, a couple hours of that, then I kind of figured out that this is a new fashion. And they weren't necessarily devotees, especially after a few of them come by and you see that they're, you know, very, how you say, they prepared themselves very seriously for the winter so that they won't freeze. You know? Then you understand that they're not, they weren't devotees. So it's just a fashion. So it's not a fashion. It's that we understand that this material world is a place of misery and we are willing to give it up. Detach yourself and take up Krishna's path, which is the tilak. Right? So that's the main purpose of it. So if that's there in the consciousness, see the Yamadutas can catch somebody who takes the material world as value. Right? And they're not doing devotional service. So if one is doing devotional service, then there's no problem. Because one will be remembering Krishna, one will be chanting Krishna's name. I'm not sure. It didn't mention in Bhagavatam Ajamya was wearing neck beads. Right? So wearing in the neck beads is important because it reminds us of that. It reminds others of this. And just, you know, Yamadutas happily passing by, then they notice them. But otherwise, if we're preaching, then Krishna is going to be taking care of us. So around here you don't have to worry, you know. If you happen to be, you know, out for a few days in, you know, Tehran or Lebanon, you know, preaching there, maybe you might not be wearing your neck beads. But as long as you're around here, I don't think you have any problem. Yeah.
I have a question on the heading of this.
Serving the deity with great devotion.
I'm not
this has anything to do with that.
Well, the Prabhupada began speaking immediately about chanting.
Yeah.
What is the correlation between that and actual deity worship?
See, so what's happening now is we've already discussed deity worship before. Service of the devotees, serving the Lord, all these things before, hearing from the revealed scriptures, residing in Mathura, we've already discussed this. So now what's happened, we've come to the last five items of the 64, which again is serving the deity with great devotion, recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam amongst devotees, associating with advanced devotees, chanting the holy name of the Lord, and living in Mathura. So this will be explained more in the next chapter. What's happening here is See, sadhana bhakti means these 64 items. 64 aspects of devotional service. That makes sadhana bhakti. Now, sadhana bhakti has two divisions, vaidhi and raganuga. So in raganuga, the emphasis is on these last five. Like that. Though the others are performed, but the emphasis is on this. Because these are specifically mukya. So you have two kinds of activities. One is called mukya, which means directly. It itself then gives the result. Gona means it assists. Like chanting Hare Krishna is mukya. It itself will elevate you, take back the Godhead. Plus it continues eternally. Right? Then hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that is mukya. Taking your bath three times a day is gona. Right? It assists. By taking bath, it helps us be more easily situated in the mode of goodness. And it is very favorable for our service to the deity and association with other devotees. Right? If we don't take our bath, intimate association with advanced devotees might prove to be difficult. Right? So they assist in that. They're not actually... It itself doesn't take you back to Godhead. So like this, then the different activities are there. Then these especially are very powerful. Of these 64, these are considered to be the most powerful. If you look at it carefully, all the 64 expand out of these. Like the first principle, approaching spiritual master, taking shelter of them, taking initiation, then taking instruction, then following questioning. Following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, this comes out of associating with devotees. Just that in this associating with devotees, you have neophyte devotees, madhyam devotees, and the advanced devotees, like this. So then, one that aspect is there. Worship of Tulsi is part of deity worship. Taking prasad is part of deity worship. Most of the 64 items we see are connected with deity worship, like that. So we see that they all come out of these. So these are being presented here as that these five are very special. So like the technical points of them have already been explained. Now it's more like the consciousness of it. So even in worship of the deity, because it says here who is chanting the holy name, who feels transcendental pleasure being engaged, who is constantly engaged in chanting the holy name and who feels transcendental pleasure being engaged in devotional service is certainly awarded the facilities of devotional service and is never given just mukti, liberation. So here the key word would be constantly engaged. So constantly engaged means nishta. So here in this, the worship of the deity, one is always chanting. Because someone who's on this platform, then minimum needs to be in the platform of the madhyama. So in there, then we have nishta, Bhajana Kriya starts. So then they're fixed in their chanting. And from that, then we see everything goes nice. Because Krishna, if the deity worship, if we're not nice to other living entities, compassionate, don't deal properly in etiquette, we don't really please the deity with our deity worship. So then we see someone on the platform who is steady in chanting, then they're humbler than a blade of grass. They're more tolerant than the tree. They respect others, don't expect respect for themselves, and therefore they can chant all the time. So the symptom is if that is there, then you know that their deity worship is going to be very well received. Right? Plus it's going to be working on a platform of they're doing it to please the Lord. Right? They do all the things, it pleases the Lord. and then that pleases them, rather than they like doing this activity, so they want to do it. Right? So it takes on a slightly different flavor, and it's showing that someone on this platform is already beyond liberation. Right? So it's they're not. Yeah, it means that we start to appreciate the various platforms of advanced devotional service like that. Otherwise, the tendency, as we were discussing yesterday, we generally think that there's the neophyte, the common devotee, and then there's the advanced devotee. And that's it. And the preachers are just part of the common devotees, you know, like that. You know, they happen to be sent out on Sankirtan, or they're doing some preaching. And, you know, it's like, I could be doing that also. You know, it's like that that story about this guy went, Columbus, yeah. Yeah, so Columbus, after he came back, then, you know, he had done something, he had gone and did something and no one had done. So then all the other, you know, big, you know, aristocracy, Spanish aristocracy, they were chiding him, you know, with the king and saying, it was not saying, so anybody could have done it. You get on a boat, you go that way far enough and you run, so anybody could have done it. So what's the big deal? So then the king turns to him and says, then, you know, to Columbus, says, okay, let's try one thing. He went, he brought one egg, and he says, let's see who can stand it on its end. You know, with nothing to help support it, just on its own. So everybody comes there and tries and different balancing things and everything. And finally, when no one can do it, then Columbus comes along, takes the egg, takes something, very carefully kind of pokes the bottom a little bit, doesn't break it, but just makes a flat space and then sticks it on the table and it stands. So immediately everybody says, well, anybody could have done that. And he says, yes, but nobody did do it. So like that, we have to understand those who have dedicated themselves to the preaching and all that, then they're special. They're very special. Those who take that endeavor, make that endeavor, take that say risk for the Lord. This is very dear to the Lord. So it's special. This is considered advanced. So then that is that has to be seen that it's something special. Then that we start to make we see more of the levels like that. More of the levels. Rupa Goswami actually divides the three levels each up into so many divisions. Like that. When he gives the Shraddha to Prema, then each one is divided up into so many. And then I think Vishwanath mentions that those can be also divided up. Even you take something like Nishta, you can have a Kanista Nishta, you know, Kanista Nishta, or excuse me. No. Yeah, he's making that. Madhyam. Kanista Madhyam, Madhyam Madhyam, Uttam Madhyam. You know, Kanista Kanista, Madhyam Kanista, Uttam Kanista. Like this. So that way you get nine divisions. So then, at least we should recognize the three, you know, like that. Then it becomes special. So in here, then it's taking on this flavor where the mood, the devotional mood becomes the prominent. The chanting, the service, the constant service, undeviating service, that becomes the prominent element within these five when they're mentioned on their own, like that. And then in the next chapter, the next chapter deals just with these. It's, you know, it's called the five potent forms of devotional service. Does that make any sense? In other words, it's like, how you'd say, someone who's quite good at something can tell if someone else is good or has potential by something very simple. Like generally, I've seen like on, just to give an example, someone who's who can cook. I just watch how they stir. And depending upon how they stir, I can tell what kind of a cook they are. Just by that. You don't have to, it means they may be, you know, cooking this or cooking that, but just how they deal with the spoon when they stir the things in the pot, you can tell what kind of a cook they are. So if that is there, then you know the rest of it's okay. Then it will be everybody has their technique or how much they know, But, you know, a cook is something more. So it's just like, you know, someone lectures or something, you can tell if they're able to get the effect. They may have, you know, good, how you say, vocabulary or not, or know many stories or not, or have read a lot or not, but you can see that this person can speak, or someone can manage. They're able to go and influence people. You know? So then you know. Sometimes a kshatriya is defined by, is respect by influence. Because if they have influence, they're going to have power, they're going to have wealth, they're going to have good ministers, they're going to have everything. So if they have influence, they're going to have those things. So it's just you take one thing and then you can tell the rest of it. You know, it's like the, you take one grain of rice, you can tell the rest, like that. So here, if this aspect is there, then you know deity worship will be good. And if that's not there, then you know there'll be some problems in the deity worship. You know, like that. Okay, so anything else in this? Okay. Next is recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam among devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam is the desire tree of Vedic wisdom. Veda itself means the aggregate of knowledge. And whatever knowledge is required for human society is perfectly presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. There are different branches of knowledge in the Vedic writings, including sociology, politics, medicine, and military art. All these and other branches of knowledge are perfectly described in the Vedas. So as far as spiritual knowledge is concerned, that is also perfectly described there. And Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the ripened fruit of this desire-fulfilling tree of the Vedas. A tree is honored by the production of its fruit. For example, a mango tree is considered very valuable because it produces the king of all fruits, the mango. When the mango fruit becomes ripened, it is the greatest gift of that tree. And Srimad Bhagavatam is similarly held to be the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree. And as ripened fruit becomes more relishable when first touched by the beak of a parrot, or shuka, Srimad Bhagavatam has become more relishable by being delivered through the transcendental mouth of Sukadeva Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam should be received in the cyclic succession without any breakage. When a ripened fruit comes from the upper part of the tree onto the ground by the process of being handed down from a higher branch to a lower branch by persons in the tree, the fruit does not break. Srimad Bhagavatam, when received in the parampara system or the cyclic succession, will likewise remain unbroken. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that the cyclic succession or parampara is the way of receiving transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge must come down through the disciplic succession, through authorized persons who know the real purpose of the Shastra. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended that one learn Srimad Bhagavatam from the mouth of the self-realized person called Bhagavatam. Bhagavata means in relationship with the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So the devotee is sometimes called Bhagavatam. And the book, which is in relationship with devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is also called Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended that, in order to relish the real taste of Srimad Bhagavatam, one should take instruction from the person Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is relishable even by a liberated person. Shukadeva Goswami admitted that although he was liberated from within the very womb of his mother, it was only after relishing Srimad Bhagavatam that he became a great devotee. Thus, one who is desirous of advancing in Krishna consciousness should relish the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam through the discussions of authorized devotees. In Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, first chapter, verse 9, Shukadeva Goswami admits that although he was very much attracted by the impersonal Brahman, when he heard the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the mouth of his father, Vyasadeva, he became more attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. The idea is that Vyasadeva was also a self-realized soul, and his mature contribution of transcendental knowledge was delivered directly to Shukadeva Goswami in the manner indicated. So the Vedic literature is the aggregate of all knowledge. As mentioned here, that's the definition. And then the perfect fruit of that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam contains, means of all the knowledge, spiritual knowledge is the best. And of that spiritual knowledge, the Bhagavatam is the best. It's the most perfect presentation of transcendental knowledge. Now in the Bhagavatam, also these other branches of sociology, politics, medicine, military, art, all these are covered, but from their transcendental viewpoint. So that is the most important aspect. You have that, you have the branch of knowledge. Just like we mentioned before, someone may be a good cook. Even if they only knew two or three recipes, and they are expert in that, you have to call them a good cook. You can't say the definition is just who knows many recipes or who knows so much theory about cooking. No, it's who can cook properly. So even if the amount of detail of knowledge is less, if one actually understands the principle and understands the mood and understands its therefore its transcendental application, they have the knowledge. Then if you want details of how to work the material energy, so many books are there. You want to know more about politics, then the whole Dhanurveda, Arthashastra, Dharma Shastras are there. One wants to find out more about the astrological, so many books are there. You need more about Sanskrit, so many books are there that can give you the detail. But those books directly will not give you the essence. Otherwise, Vyasadeva would not have to have written the Srimad Bhagavatam. He'd already written all those books of knowledge, and he was not satisfied because he did not directly say, here is God, here is how to serve him. So then, after writing all the Vedic knowledge, and Prabhupada mentions in his maturity, means in his wisdom, in his realization, then Narad Muni instructed him to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit of the Vedic knowledge, so it is the perfect essence of everything. So what is the conclusion of all the branches of Vedic knowledge can be found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you know Bhagavatam, you actually know all the other branches of knowledge. Then, so one can just with the Bhagavatam perform his duties, chant Hare Krishna, perform his basic duties, and be satisfied, go back to Godhead, because he already knows the conclusions. Or if he needs, he can find out more details of how to work things in the material world. And with those details, based on the conclusions he knows from Bhagavatam that he's received from authority, then he can get it done. But if we approach those other books not through Bhagavatam, we will fail. Guaranteed. 100%. We approach the Vedic literatures without the conclusions of Bhagavatam, we will fail. Guaranteed. Like that. Guaranteed. So we must approach the Bhagavatam and through the Bhagavatam see the other literatures. If we can't see the two, if we say they're contradictory, they have nothing to do with each other, then better we stick to Bhagavatam and not touch the other literature. Otherwise, then it'll be the example of the jewel on the head of the poisonous snake. It looks very attractive. It is a branch of knowledge. It's Vedic. But if we go near it and touch it, we will be bitten and die of the poison. So we have to be very careful in this. So the Bhagavatam is that perfection. There's nothing that's not covered in the Bhagavatam. It deals with all the books of knowledge. And it gives their conclusion. Uddhava. Right? No. Not Uddhava. Is it Uddhava? It's either Uddhava or Vidura. It's either Uddhava approaching Maitreya or Vidura approaching Uddhava. Where he mentions, I've studied the Mahabharata, I've studied all these different branches of Vedic knowledge. Huh? Vidura says that when he approaches Uddhava.
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 He approaches Uddhava first, then he says
to me. Oh, so he says this when he approaches
to me, Maitreya.
Okay. So he says, I've read all these things. So I've read all the details. But I want conclusions. You know, so you've heard directly from the Lord, so you please tell me what are the conclusions of all this. Then it makes some sense. Right? That is there. Like we see Srila Prabhupada, many times he would like to do this, especially in India. Things like, there would be some big pundits, they would come and visit Prabhupada, and he would say, what is the, you know, who is God? And they go, well, Swamiji, this is a very difficult subject, you know, this, that, so many things. And then Prabhupada would call in a Gurukul boy, you know, an 8-year-old boy, and ask him, who is God? He'll say, Krishna. And he'll say, see, he knows, why you don't know? You're the big pundit. Right? So the boy, he knows very little details of technical philosophy, but he knows the conclusion. Right? The most amazing is just Prabhupada starting from the conclusion and working backwards, is the example of when Prabhupada arrived in San Francisco. And then Prabhupada had been preaching in New York to the devotees there, and I think Mukunda, he went to San Francisco and started preaching there. And after not very long, I don't remember, 3 months or sometime, it wasn't a very long time, Prabhupada went there. So when he went, you didn't have all these nice shaved up temple devotees. You had all these, you know, long-haired hippies who still went next door to, you know, diggers and ate and went down to the donut shop and, you know, now and again, you know, probably checked out their little bag hanging on their waist and these different things. And so then, but they all, Krishna's God, I am his servant. And the process to achieve, and the goal of life is developing pure love for Krishna, and the process is chanting Hare Krishna. That's the essence of the whole philosophy, the whole aspects, the technical aspects, sambandha, abhideya, prayojana, perfectly established. Krishna is God, I am his servant, sambandha is established. Right? The goal, I am to develop love for him, the process, chanting Hare Krishna. They already knew this. They didn't know anything else. They just knew it's something far out. You chant Hare Krishna, it's really nice, you know, like that. But they knew the essence of all the philosophy, right with that. Then from there you can expand. If you don't know this, you actually don't know philosophy. Someone like you, big pundits, they know so many books. They can quote, you know, scriptures like the wind. They can speak fluent Sanskrit. But if they don't know this essence, then they're not actually knowledgeable, you know? So the Bhagavatam gives that knowledge. Then from there, you can go back into all these other things. Because everything's talked about in Bhagavatam. There's no subjects that aren't dealt with like that. Because it is the perfection and the philosophy, it's the perfect presentation of the philosophy. But because the philosophy is presented in Puranic form, therefore is presented through the activities and culture, mood and understandings of the devotees and the Lord and their relationship. So it is like it's applied philosophy. It's already, means you hear the philosophy, but it's already applied for you to show you how to do it. So it's like one thing you get a book on it, on how to do an activity. It's another thing you get the example. Someone has the book and shows you how to do it. That's the perfect thing. So the Bhagavatam combines both. And therefore, it's the perfect literature. So sometimes devotees will take it that Bhagavatam is not practical. It's just philosophy. But that's the reason that the Purana is more important in this age than the Veda. Because the Veda just gives philosophy, like the Upanishads. It's just straight philosophy. Right? But the Bhagavatam shows how that philosophy is understood and lived and preached by the devotees. So then it becomes much more perfect. And we see this in the lives of brahmanas and saints and saintly kings. You know, how they acted properly, what happens if they acted improperly. All the different things we see. So it's very, if one is observant in this way, one can see all topics that are in the Bhagavatam. All topics are there. And it's not a matter of trying to twist it in. Force it in. Very naturally it's there. Very naturally the conclusions come out. Like that. So therefore it's the perfect. then it mentions that it must be heard in disciplic succession. This is very important, that we have to hear from our acharya. If it's not heard from our acharya, then it'll be very difficult for us to understand. Because the previous acharyas, they are speaking, but they will also be speaking to their audience. So then our acharya has to give us the conclusions according to how we can understand it. Then when we read the previous acharya's teachings, we will understand how they're the same. Just slight different detail of application possibly, but principles are exactly the same. But otherwise, I've heard many times devotees say there's a difference between what Prabhupada says, Jiva Goswami, or Vishwanath and Baladev, or Prabhupada and Vishwanath, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinod Thakur. They just say a difference, but that may be in detail. Jiva Goswami was speaking to some of his students, Swakya Bhav, Swakya Rasa of Radha and Krishna, because they were very much caught up in the moral principles, and so they just couldn't understand how God, who's come to establish Dharma, could act irreligiously in the Rasa dance and go off with others' wives. So that is the rasa. But if you look at the tattva, they're his energies. So they're automatically his. So he just explained it through the aspect of tattva and then brought in this swakya aspect. So rasa is being discussed, but he points out how they're eternally married, Radha and Krishna. And then he quoted from the Shastra about Brahma coming and marrying them, Lalita Devi married, there was a marriage. All these different things, that they're eternally married. So you don't have to worry. It's their pastime that they make it look like parakia, though they're married. Then they can understand. Oh, okay. So just for taste, they make it, it's more exciting if they make it like, because that's what it is. Tattva-wise, here's the energy and energetic. But as far as rasa goes, then it's parakia. There's no concept. They don't think they're married. So then, in here, it satisfied those devotees, so then they could go on in their devotional service. They could properly worship Krishna. And that, and just the Vrindavan mood was not theirs. They should stick, they will be more attracted or pleased with the Dwarka mood. And same devotees go to Dwarka with Krishna, manifest in Dwarka, and then, but there it has that, some Aishwarya is mixed. So then it takes on that flavor. But Jiva Goswami in no way is professing the Swakya. He's always the Parakya. But just if the audience can't handle it, you have to explain it how they can understand. So he hasn't changed anything. But one has to see how the purpose behind and how he's dealing on the proper in the proper ways. He's not changed anything. So in this way, one can see that none of the acharyas conflict in the purposes. And the details, how they followed, were perfect for their time, place, and circumstance. That's why they came at that time. And if there's a change in the detail, that's the next devotee came to do that. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur moved with the intellectuals and that. And he would also speak in public places, but it was very much to catch the intellect of the people. Because the British had caught the intellect of the intelligentsia of India and diverted it to their books of philosophy and their poetry and all that. So Bhaktivinoda just tried to catch them and bring them back. Once that's done, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he can then preach very seriously, grassroots. He can just go out and just catch everybody. Because now, if the intelligentsia, they are supportive, you're not going to get any trouble. Because especially in those days, then the statement, what Bengal thinks today, then the rest of the India thinks tomorrow, was intact. It was like that. So then if you catch them, then everybody will appreciate. So then method may appear very different. But it had to, that was just the way they had to do things. So then that's the second point. So the parampara, we have to go through parampara. And one cannot doubt one's acharya. One may have doubts oneself, but one knows the acharya is correct. This is the difference between between the Vedic concept and the modern concept of questioning. See, in the Vedic concept, the authority is the authority. If I don't understand, it's because my lack of, you know, intelligence or my lack, I just didn't catch the point. Person made the point very nicely, I didn't catch it. Therefore, I inquire, could you please explain, I'm confused on this point. It seems to me there's a contradiction here, you said this and you said that, I didn't catch how they fit together. But there's, so the doubt is I don't understand it. The doubt is not whether it's true or not. So it's very, very important, this aspect. It's a very important aspect of the culture. I don't doubt the point, but I don't understand the point. But the modern is, I doubt the point. I might even doubt whether this person is, like, as long as they're talking and I'm going, wow, this is very nice, but as soon as they say something I don't agree with, then immediately as an authority I reject it, as whatever they say I doubt it, and it's not submissive inquiry anymore. Then it becomes very, you know, because then it's my intelligence against their intelligence. So this is very important. So one has to accept the acharya. And if something one doesn't understand, then one has to see, well, why did they do it that way? How is it supposed to be applied? Did we apply it properly? Right? If devotees feel that many social situations aren't so wonderful now, then, and Prabhupada had established certain things, now is it Prabhupada's fault? Or is it our fault that we didn't apply it properly? And because we didn't apply it properly, can we just blame it on someone else? We don't take any blame at all for not understanding or not trying to endeavor according to the directions. Right? We also have to, there's a relationship we have to share. You know? Like that. So the whole point is then we see the acharya is correct, the parampara is correct, the knowledge is perfect. I just didn't understand it. Shishi panchatattva ki chai. Like that. Okay. So then we'll end with that. Because the next point is on the association of advanced devotees, and that's the next point in the nectar devotion. Jai Srila Rupa Goswami Pada Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.